Hello and welcome to a special episode of Inside Education, the podcast for educators who are interested in teaching, with me, Sean Delaney. Inside Education is a weekly podcast about teaching, and you can listen to or download almost 400 previous episodes by going to seandelaney.com and clicking on podcasts. You can write to me by emailing insideeducationpodcast@yahoo.com. You can follow me on Twitter, where I use the handle @InsideEd. On this week's podcast, I'm delighted to bring you a special program on online teaching and learning, especially, but not exclusively, at the primary school level. My guest is my colleague, Kira Riley. Kira is a primary teacher who is passionate about equality of access to education, disadvantaged education, and in particular, the use of technology to enhance learning in the classroom. Prior to being appointed to Marino Institute of Education, she was seconded from her school to be an advisor in digital technologies for the Professional Development Service for Teachers. Kira is someone who has thought deeply about how technology impacts education. She understands really well the difficulties that the sudden and nationwide school closures have had for teachers who are doing their best to support children's learning when schools are closed for a longer period than is typically necessitated by closures for weather or other major incidents. I know you'll find the range of suggestions from Kira to be inspirational. I have put links to the resources she mentions on the show notes for this week's episode. Her suggestions will help teachers who have vast experience of using technology in their teaching, as well as teachers who are relative novices at it. She discusses ideas that apply to parents and children who have computers or internet access, and to those who do not have such access. Whether you are a parent who can spend time working alongside your child, or whether you are too busy or too stressed to do so, Kira will have ideas for you. My preference with interviews generally is to meet guests face to face because I find the sound quality is better. However, we used Zoom for this interview and mostly it worked well. Kira's audio is particularly clear, more so than mine, in fact. When we spoke, I first put it to Kira that teachers had very little time to prepare for a prolonged period of online learning and that as a result, what is happening around the country varies. Added to that, the situations in many households could be tense or busy at this time. Given such a context, I asked Kira where schools could start to implement some online teaching and learning for their students.
Okay, so to begin, it's important to acknowledge that every school is on their own individual digital learning journey. At the moment, we are rolling out the digital learning framework. We are in technically year two of that process, and schools would have made various commitments to do different things depending on what they decided would be their focus. Up until now, there was no obligation for schools to do anything, particularly at primary level. And I'm not at all surprised that we're finding that some schools have particular mechanisms in place to communicate with the home and to work with pupils remotely, and others don't, because there was no requirement up until now to have anything like that. We're in entirely uncharted territory. There is no map to guide us between now and whenever we return to school. And all teachers, even those experienced in this field, are pioneers to a certain extent. And I wouldn't want to criticize any school for not feeling equipped or prepared for this. Nobody is. Even the schools that have some sort of, I would say, machinery or some sort of an operation in place to make communication with the home possible. So I would cut teachers some slack there. But what I would say is, this is going to change a lot of how we work going forward. And looking at how teachers are working in the past week, it makes for a fascinating study of the ingenuity of teachers in Ireland, the creativity of teachers. But also it kind of tells a story of the have and the have-nots. And I'd be very conscious, before we even talk about how people are working, to just highlight from the off, while it is well-intentioned that teachers are sending out work and using digital means to communicate and using digital means for teaching and learning, it's really important to note that there is a degree of privilege there. This excludes particular learners. You know, the SEN area is particularly excluded in this space. And those children from a disadvantaged background for whom this is not a priority, not being in school means a lack of structure, a lack of supports, a lack of food, etc. So just to note that even before we begin. But schools are doing amazing things. So what we're seeing at the moment is everything from ad hoc new Padlet walls that teachers have created in order to share resources with the parents and with pupils, right up to quite complex use of tools such as Google Classroom to set out work agendas on a daily basis. You see teachers are using audiovisual means to communicate with the home and to have a visual contact with the home through the likes of Skype Classroom, you have Zoom, you have Google Hangouts. You know, there are so many different mechanisms that teachers have adapted, but maybe in order to get to that place, we need to take a step back. You know, there's a presumption that teachers have access to technology. That's not always the case. So teachers are using their own technology in this regard. And also, I mean, we need to reflect upon the fact that some schools may have had mechanisms set up through the likes of Aladdin, their system of maintaining record, school records for role and contact with the home, etc., all established. Others don't. So for them, the likes of your Padlet wall works extremely well because you can just send out a link. But it has been truly amazing what people have been doing, all set up very quickly with very, very little notice.
I want to come back to the Padlet wall idea in a little while, because that's something that you have done a lot of work on and a lot of preparatory work even. But for somebody, say, who is at zero at the moment, you know, I mean, maybe they're comfortable using the computer themselves, but they haven't done anything at all. Where would be a good place just to start? What might be, you know, say, and as I say, it is making such certain presumptions, and I fully acknowledge that in terms of online connection and in terms of having a computer. But where could somebody make a reasonable start, do you think?
Well, the first thing I would say is try to communicate with your school leadership to make sure there's some sort of uniform approach being taken in a school. You may have, for example, a number of children in a school and you don't really want teachers taking different approaches. So it would be good if you could agree, at our school, we are doing X. Now, from there, you can decide what platforms you want to work on. You might have, for example, Class Dojo set up, but you're only using it to this point as a way of maintaining classroom records for behavior management. So Class Dojo is a website and an app where they actually offer a lot of services now. It used to be originally just a behavior points management system. So each child had a little monster character, like a little emoji that points would be awarded to. And parents could access their own child's individual account to see what they were getting rewards for. In recent times, it has evolved where they have lots of different like videos and support services for learning, particularly around emotional development and emotional well-being and wellness, etc. But recently they added, in the last number of years, their class wall option, which is like an internal Facebook wall, essentially. The interface is like Facebook, where you can communicate with parents, send out links. Parents can send content to you that you can then put up. But it means that everybody who is in the class can access this wall. That is online, but it is behind closed doors so that only the parents of the children in the class can access that wall. So that might be an option for some schools. Then you have, if you are lucky enough to have the likes of G Suite for Education set up in your school, or if you are using Microsoft products, you may be using Microsoft Teams to communicate, where you have like that kind of virtual classroom interface where you can send content back and forth, you can communicate with the pupils, and they can send content back to you. Then you have your, I suppose, slightly more detached, where you mightn't have a two-way conversation happening, but you want to disseminate information. That's where the likes of your Padlet, say, or even an open access Google Doc, a public link, where you can pop in as much content as possible and send out one link where people can access the content. Now, Padlet is like a virtual interactive notice board. It is an app and a website. There is a free version of it where you can make, I think it's up to 3 or 4 free Padlet walls, and you can share that with people. You can embed it maybe perhaps in your school blog or website so that there is a center point where people can access that wall. You can, of course, send out the link, but ideally, in an ideal world, say if I was back at school and I was in this position, I would like the idea of maybe having the Padlet sitting on my school blog or website. And then that could be the center point. It becomes like the center focus for the home when trying to engage with the work that you're sending out.
If we go then on to Padlet, because as I say, that's one of the reasons why I wanted to talk to you today. You have developed one particular Padlet wall. And can you say a little bit about how you went about developing it and then maybe bring us through it? Because I will obviously be putting a link to it on the show notes for this week's
podcast. Perfect. Okay, so it became apparent on Thursday as schools were quite quickly gathering their materials and getting out the school door that we were looking at potentially quite a long time away from school. And parents were obviously nervous, and teachers were conscious of the fact that they didn't want to just be suddenly sending home lots of book work. Also, and this is another debate, just doing book work is not something that we would ever do in schools. So we wanted to allow for parents to have somewhat a more authentic learning experience to what the child would be used to in school. So it became apparent that there was definitely a space there for those of us who are used to sharing online to have some mechanism to pop up links, resources, tools, the names of apps for others to access. And I just decided to, I'm an experienced Padlet user. I use it a lot with the students in Merino across all of the courses. For example, Ed Studies in Merino, we use it as a way of maybe highlighting or promoting work, or we could emphasize how it might be used at a conference to network, how various charities and education offices use it to disseminate information. And then on the BEd and the PME programs, we would use it as a classroom tool. So experience in using it, I know it works well. It's a simple interface that even somebody who would have limited tech experience, they would understand what it is. If they were sent the link, they would open it up and understand that each little box, or I would describe it as like a virtual post-it note, contains information. It could be a link, it could be a video, it could be an MP3 file, it could be a drawing. So there's lots of different content that you can put up, and it all will exist on the one link, on the one platform. Now, in doing that, I've actually ended up, I suppose, not like obviously teachers did this all off their own back, but I see there's a lot more of these Padlet walls mushrooming around the country, and schools are taking this approach, and that's entirely sensible because it's free to use and it's easy to access and it's easy to understand how to use it.
Your one, I'm just looking at it like it's a real treasure trove in terms of, you know, I mean, I'm looking here in one particular part of the wall. You have Kula 4 or Kula Catter for Gaeilge. You have Do Ink Animation and Drawing. You have Quiver 3D for Visual Arts, and you have Kahoot Assessment. I mean, if we just need to take those four, could you say a little bit about, you know, what do they involve and how might they help somebody who is working with children at home?
Well, Kula Catter is probably the number one, well, I'd say it is, without knowing any stats, it's the number one app, Irish app, that would be used by Irish schools. And I put it up hoping that schools might already be using it, so there would be a degree of familiarity. It would also give parents great comfort that they would still be, not to sound patronising, I'm sure their own standard of Irish would be excellent, but for a lot of parents, we know anecdotally, it might be a subject that they would be a little bit nervous about, you know, looking at for when at home with their own children. So I wanted to put that up there. It's a lovely, well-designed, simple app where you can look at videos, songs. It's thematically linked to the curriculum, so it's an ideal place to start. The other one you mentioned then was Quiver 3D. So Quiver 3D, I wanted to put that up because how that works is you go onto the website and you can get a certain amount of colouring pages for free. So you would just print them off and the child would colour them in, which is a nice traditional, I suppose, old school unplugged activity that we would really recommend children be pursuing over the next number of weeks. But then after you've completed the colouring, you then use the app to basically hover over the picture, and there's a QR code in the corner of the page, and the app will read that QR code and that makes the picture come to life. So you actually see it in 3D proportion on the screen. It's a really exciting way of kind of bringing a picture to life, basically.
And that's one where you use a phone rather than necessarily a laptop.
Exactly. I was trying to give a mix. Again, we're not sure what tools or resources children have access to. It could be an Android device, it could be an iPad, it could be a Chromebook, it could be a laptop, it could be a PC in the corner of the kitchen. You know, there's lots of different probabilities out there. So yeah, I wanted to provide something, you know, for everybody, basically.
Yeah, and the other situation is that even if there is a laptop in the home, very often the parents are using it now because they're working from home, or other siblings are using it, and that can be a problem as well. So how, you know, are there any practical solutions you can give people in terms of maximizing the impact of using technology at home?
Entirely depending on, like, if there's a number of children, you, like, don't be shy about grouping activities together. I mean, we have multi-grade classes and they are often the most creative spaces, because children have to work with peers and they work together and they're challenged or scaffolded and supported by another learner, and that could work really well with siblings. So maybe bring people together. If you are limited as regards resources and that, I would say maybe try, and like, obviously don't put yourself under too much pressure, but if you could kind of timetable something at the start of the day so that, you know, you're managing the children's expectations as to when their turn is, that would be very helpful. I mean, again, that's something we would do in school. Children like to anticipate and know what's ahead of them, so it would be helpful if you did that for the use of technology. But I agree with you, it is a challenge, and I'm wary of getting into the space of using phones here. You know, sometimes you can do excellent activities and learning activities on a phone, but you're veering into a different space there. And we are not going to be in this dreadful space forever. Soon we will be back to normal. It will be a new normal, but it will be a normal. And I'd be nervous about swaying into the phone space for primary school children. So I try to limit it to whatever alternatives you have.
If we go back to your Padlet wall, I picked out some at random there. What are your own favourite apps on it, and what are your own favourite links? What do you kind of say, this is one I would, you know, really definitely use if I was teaching?
There's a couple if I was a teacher I would be promoting amongst my pupils. And then there's a few if I was a parent trying to get work done and trying to make this homeschool, which is, you know, it's not what it is, but that's the phrase being used in the media at the moment. So if I was a teacher, I'd be first of all really emphasizing movement and brain breaks. So I'd be looking there at your Go Noodle. Again, good chance the children will be familiar with the Go Noodle activity breaks, everything from yoga to calming, breathing, mindfulness exercises, to silly nonsense dances that get them up, moving, get the heart rate up, and kind of can help you transition between activities. Particularly for those of us who don't have large gardens. You have your Orti 10 at 10, which was the get up and dance in class for 10 minutes every day at 10 o'clock. All of those videos are available for free. Super. You can also find them through your TV. So that kind of thing. The body coach is also doing every day, Monday to Friday at 9 o'clock, a 5 minute kind of an activity buster activity. Super. So I would really emphasize that. I would also be pursuing a lot of the activities that you might go online to find the resources for them, but the completion of the task is actually offline. So say, for example, I taught fifth and sixth class. So I loved the use of the BBRASP unplugged coding activities and problem solving activities, where it requires higher order thinking to solve a conundrum of some sort. Now, it's all tied into coding and programming principles, but the child doesn't know that when they're completing it. But again, it's something different. It's something fresh. It requires a little bit of out the box thinking. Those would be the kind of things I'd be kind of, as a teacher, I like the idea of giving them something fresh and something new. Again, just because you can't recreate what's happening in school. Now, there's some other ones there that I would kind of to tick the curricular boxes I'd be looking at. Khan Academy, superb for maths. There's a link there to a mapping document that maps all of the activities on Khan Academy to the Irish curriculum, third to sixth class maths. That was done a number of years ago. Myself and a number of teachers were involved in a research project in DCU, and we did that. That's great, because you kind of feel then, well, that's doing what they would normally be doing in school, but maybe in an alternative way.
So, and like, innovation for children as well, because they can see their progress through different objectives of the curriculum.
Absolutely. And again, you're going back to the parent who's trying to finish a call or an email in the corner of the room. You can set the challenges for them. And it has, like, a lot of these tools would have an intelligent spin on them. So they interpret where the needs of the child would be, or where they have strengths, or maybe where they need more repetitious activities. So that's a good one. So they'd be the ones as a teacher. As a parent, if I wanted maybe more quiet time and I needed them to maybe just sit there for a little bit while I'm doing this, I really love Epic Reading. It's a fantastic app. that has lifted, they have the educator account available to everybody now for the duration of the school closure. And it's interfaces like Netflix for books for children. And there's a really nice selection of fiction and, crucially, really contemporary non-fiction texts. So even the reluctant reader would be really enthused and encouraged to continue and read and explore that. I like Teach Your Monster to Read. That's a brilliant website. Again, it's one that schools are happy to pay for, but they've lifted their paywall, so you can use it. It's freely accessible at the moment. This is the perfect opportunity to give it a go. There's another couple of ones like, say, GeoGuessr. It's a kind of a, it's a classic where the, you set the child a geography task where they have to try and find a location and use their geography skills. Really nice task. Keeps them busy. And then there's other things then where it's like, again, going back to the resources you find online, but you would complete offline. There are really exciting resources on the themed web pages of various different charities or those themed weeks. So say, for example, Science Foundation Ireland have an amazing list of hands-on experiments that you can do in the home with stuff you just found under the sink. You have the likes of the Active Schools flag website. They have loads of activities. Found a great one and it's linked on the Padlet wall. It's the Run Around Ireland concept. So you would have done this in school where all the classes have a challenge to run around the yard so many times and you see how far around you can get. So you go outside, you run around, so that's your PE. Then you're calculating the distance, how much you're running, so that's your maths. And then you come in and you sit down with the Atlas or with Google Maps and you try and say, well, I ran from Dunleary to Killiney or whatever it was. So again, thinking outside the box, it's getting you outside, it's getting the heart racing, but it's applying the skills of the curriculum. So these are the kind of things that, you know, yes, you're using technology, but there's a practical element to them as well.
And they're all linked to your Padlet wall. And as I say, I'll put a link to that on the show notes for this week. What about then? Okay, so the teacher can give all this work to students. What about giving feedback to the students or getting making it into more of a two-way process? We touched on that earlier, but can you say a little bit about that and how possible that is, you know, using the various devices?
So the two-way conversation works best on the likes of Google Classroom or, say, Seesaw. Now, a fair few schools would have the likes of Google Classroom or Microsoft Teams set up, but it is less common at primary level. You may have some mechanism in place, and schools are using these tools, but they might use them in school and they hadn't previously used them outside of school. So say, for example, a number of schools have been in contact with me in the last number of days where they have Seesaw established in their school. Now, Seesaw is a digital portfolio tool where up until now, the children would have been using it in school and school only. And how it works is there is a class Seesaw page that parents have given permission for their children to be a part of. As the children complete activities, they might take pictures of their work, they might record parts of their learning, they might put up writing, they might take a picture of their work and give a little oral reflection piece with it. Anything can be saved, to be honest with you, within your Seesaw portfolio page. However, they were accessing it by use of a QR code within the classroom. So they would scan into their account via this QR code, but this was done during school time. They never would have used it at home, and that QR code wasn't accessible to the home. Parents could see what their children were putting up in school, but it wasn't being done at home. So there's a lot of schools that are looking into that and adapting that space now to make it work. I'm a big fan of Seesaw, I have to say. It's a very simple interface. There are two apps for it. The app to upload, do, make, create. And then there's another app for the parents and families to see what's being put up for each individual child. They have a really nice, if you choose, you can, a lot within Seesaw, you as the teacher control how much accessibility or how much, I suppose, communication you want. But there is a mechanism to contact parents on it if you so choose, and there is a mechanism as well for commentary. So under a piece of writing you could give a response and you could grade essentially or give feedback. So Seesaw would work very well. Google Classroom for me is superb, but it would be a challenge for younger children, and you would need, it wouldn't be something I would not advise that anybody, you know, in a kind of a knee-jerk reaction to what's happening at the moment, try and set that up. if you are not familiar with it, it's too much to take on at this stage. But going back to what I said earlier, I think this is, now is not the time for it. And, you know, there's a lot more serious things to come in the next couple of weeks that will give us all a great perspective on a great many things. But a time will come in the future where we reflect upon this time. And I fundamentally believe that what we've seen in the last week will change how we work remotely, that there will be a requirement to work remotely from teachers' side and with parents in the home, and that this will nearly become part and parcel of the school experience.
I was reading about Singapore this morning, actually, and they did not close their schools because of COVID-19. But what they did was, back in 2003, when SARS was a feature, they did two things. One was, every year since then, they took 2 days out of the school year where children stayed at home and worked online to be prepared for this eventuality. And the other thing they did was they gave every child going to school their own thermometer. So a child could check if they had a fever. And if they had, then they actually could go home immediately before they would actually be spreading it to other children. So I just thought that preparation for the online learning, of having 2 days a year where children would go home and prepare, that's something we may well need to build into.
Absolutely. And say, for example, most schools now would have some sort of an acceptable use policy as regards the use of technology within the school. But in the next couple of weeks, and in the past week, teachers have been using school laptops in various different amazing and creative ways. But again, it is a bit of a wild west out there. And I go back to being sure that you know that you're happy with the choices you're making. And at the moment, we're just scrambling to fill a space and to, I think, in fairness, to feel useful. I mean, teachers are public servants who want to do their bit. I mean, we look at our colleagues in the health sector and we look at them in awe, considering what we're doing. It's so minor. But whatever we can contribute, if we can help ease the pressures or provide for any kind of a scaffold of routine in the home, we're doing it. I mean, it's great what teachers have done, and we've pulled it out of the bag, and we're trying lots of different tricks and tools and everything. But we need to make sure that we're happy with introducing these things, and that, you know, we'd be cognizant of acceptable use policies and what we're committing to and how we're going to use technology in our school and what we expect of students. You know, reflecting on what you said from the experience in Singapore, I envisage that in the same way schools have, you know, crisis management plans for, you know, many distressing and difficult situations, this might be something that we have to factor in the future. And I would see that as an opportunity. You know, it's like, never waste a good crisis. I have even been trying to jot down notes of things I'm seeing and things that I feel are working well and things I might be a little bit more nervous of. Well-intentioned though they be, I'd be maybe a little bit concerned about it, because you don't know whether you can control it all. Not to say you can't control everything in life, but say, for example, I would be a bit concerned about schools suddenly doing video calls with pupils in the home and not having any policy around contact and access in that way. Now, again, the teachers doing that, they're helping, this is coming from a good place, but we just need to be very careful there. Again, even emailing. A number of schools are still not in a space where they have school email addresses. So say, for example, it's absolutely fine that a parent or a principal would be emailing at this time, Mrs. Riley, fourth class at St. Peter's NS, whatever. But it's an entirely different matter that if they were emailing my personal email address. You know, these are things, like, look, not the priority right now. We're trying to help. We're trying to do our bit. But it's something we need to tease out going forward. And where schools, fingers crossed, when we start back in September and schools are maybe really properly assessing how to move forward from all of this, regardless of what happens in the summertime, because you can't do something like this. When we go back, it's going to be all about recalibrating, supporting, you know, the pastoral care element is going to be key when we go back. But in September or beyond, I would really urge school leaders to look at how they manage technology in their school right now within their own, the leadership and management realm. Say if you just look at, like, looking at our school, say, and school self-evaluation and the digital learning framework. Are we fulfilling our requirements there truly? Do we have good a school email system in place? Do we have a shared drive? You know, those kind of things. And start there invest in your staff. And then I firmly believe the teaching and learning elements will follow after that. But it will be interesting. It will be interesting to see how this alters life as we know it for all of humanity.
Absolutely. No, that's definitely going to make a difference. Online learning can be synchronous, which is, you know, like what we're doing now. It can, you know, you can be live, or it can be something that happens asynchronously, so that you know, the teacher puts up something in the morning and children can access it at any time during the day. What do you think is going to be more feasible in most cases, or is it probably a mixture of the two, or is it the asynchronous where the teacher does it and then children can respond in their own time?
I would like to see a combination. I think, again, it depends on what tools you're using. Like, say, for example, one tool I haven't mentioned yet that I know some primary schools are using. I was only speaking to a school in Kerry, Scarted Lynn National School, and they're using Edmodo as their interface for communicating with pupils. Edmodo, for those of you who don't know what it is, it basically, again, it's like an educational Facebook. And the teacher and educators can push out activities to the learners, and they in turn can upload and post content. Edmodo has a long history of being linked to concepts like the flipped classroom, for example. So say we know we're learning about electricity next week. Rather than me going in on the Thursday morning and suddenly saying, what is electricity? And maybe doing a KWL chart or something, that you would provide an opportunity for the pupils to explore key concepts relating to what it is you're trying to teach in advance of that lesson, so that when you go into the room, you can presume a certain amount of knowledge. That's where the two-way system is most useful. Now, you would need the platform for that. So if you have the platform, going down that route is excellent. And there's loads of exciting tools you can use there. Like, there's a tool called Edpuzzle I really like, where you can find a video online, top and tail it, do a voiceover on the video yourself. So instead of maybe hearing, for example, it could be a David Attenborough video. And instead of, if you wanted to be so bold as to dub over David Attenborough, you could do that so that your pupils are hearing your voice. So again, it's that classroom experience. And then you can stop the video ever so often and have key questions asked at various stages to ensure that the pupil is engaging with the video. That then could be put up on the Edmodo in advance of you doing a topic in school. So this kind of space, that would work really well, but you would need the platform. You would need Edmodo. You would need your Microsoft Teams, you would need your Google Classroom, your Seesaw. If you didn't have that space, you would have to go for the more traditional, look, I'm popping up material and I hope you engage with it.
Is there a risk that children could end up spending too much time on screens with all of this?
Without a doubt. And I think it's important to note that those of us who work in this area are incredibly concerned about that. And I would say, you know, not to heap more pressure on parents, but now is the perfect time to be very careful about your children's use of social media, for example, and to engage the services and to explore the material on the likes of webwise.ie to become up to date with new apps and technology. I mean, say, for example, TikTok has really exploded in the last number of weeks, and now TikTok content is everywhere because people are marooned at home, locked up, and they're trying to entertain themselves. So if you can come to a stage where you're working all day using, yes, fantastic tools, you're listening to an audiobook on Audible, you're working then on Typing Club to perfect your typing, and then so you could be doing really worthwhile activities all day that are educational. But then if you're migrating to your recreational use or consumption of technology into social media, suddenly you find your screen time is off the charts. That then impacts on sleep, that impacts on eating, routines, all of that. Now, because people need technology at the moment to communicate with their nearest and dearest, I would say that's why we need to be really careful about how much use we give during the day for educational reasons, because I wouldn't want to deny anybody their FaceTime or their Skype with their granny or granddad. That is such a worthwhile use of the technology, but you need to look at the overall day and not just look at, well, that's the schoolwork, because the day is the day, and the child in particular won't distinguish between the use of the Ed tool and the Skype. They just see it all as maybe iPad time. It's very important that you would put restrictions in place. If they're not in the same room with you, or if you're not monitoring what they're doing, that you would put safety mechanisms in place if you could. The likes of Net Nanny and everything would be good to explore. Again, parents are going to learn a lot from this time of being at home for concentrated periods with their children. So, yeah, I mean, it's a tricky one. It is. You just need to be very, very careful. I would be so conscious of screen time. I really would be.
Or the other risk that I would see is that, you know, the child just ends up getting distracted. Because, and that happens to all of us, you know, we kind of look at a video on YouTube and then we suddenly, you know, the first one might be fine, but then you suddenly see one that's related to it. And then, you know, before you know it, there's an hour gone by and you've just been looking at, mindlessly looking at videos.
I would say if you can at all monitor their use of the apps, if you have more than two devices, you could use the likes of like Apple Classroom to like lock a child into activities and stuff in an iPad. That's worth looking into. It's definitely something teachers need to be more aware of. Yeah, it is complicated. The likes of YouTube, you can be sensible in how you use it. So say there's a brilliant website called watchkin.com where you can paste in a URL of a video and you watch the video from, it looks like it looks on YouTube, but you see it in isolation. So you don't have all of the associated videos and other content coming up. It does stop you going down the wormhole a little bit. It's not perfect, but it's something. I would always recommend to the students that they use that, as well as that you don't look at the ads that you would see and the cookie association with particular searches that you might have been making in your own personal time. You won't be seeing associated ads that you may not be comfortable with appearing on the screen. So that's an example of something you'd use, that's Watchkin. But yeah, look, we're all guilty of it. And at the moment, rules are kind of out the window. I mean, there's a certain degree of survival about all of this.
Yeah.
I don't envy parents. I'm glad my baby is just 8 months. That's all I'll say.
Yeah. And I mean, like, because it is like, no matter what, at some level, it's probably another pressure on parents who are already under pressure because either they're out of work or else they're working from home or else they're really stressed out because they're working really longer hours than they normally would. You know, there are all different kinds of scenarios. So, you know, like, parents can't be as involved as they might like to be in many cases. And, you know, that's just a reality, really, isn't it?
And it absolutely is. And I think, like, on a wider scale, we are going to learn so much about our inability to be bored. It's not a bad thing that a child might know what boredom is from time to time. I think it's incredible how creative and how engaging and on we always are around children, but we didn't have that as children, and I'm young. Something has happened in the last number of years where we feel like it has to be all singing, all dancing, fill the time, go to summer camps, do this. You know, I read a great thing online about how during the plague in 1665, did you see this doing the rounds online?
No.
Cambridge closed. So Newton had to go home and work from home. And that was when he went out into his garden, sat under a tree and an apple fell. And, you know, so do we need to be that scared of boredom? You know, boredom, maybe good space can happen in that, you know. And I say, amid the sadness and the badness, and it's, you know, you want to monitor your access to the media and how much you're taking in. This might not be a bad thing for our young children should they stay physically well and those around them not be too impacted by this virus. This is an opportunity to really, really think about our relationships with children, our relationships with technology, the positives, the negatives. Everything is kind of up for discussion now, and that's not a bad thing. We've kind of come to a crossroads and it's timely.
You're probably going to be totally against this now, but one parent asked me about printing out material for her child to use during the day. And like, that kind of seems to go against the technology because, you know, it's not online. But, you know, what would you think about that? And are there particular apps or particular websites that might be useful for that? Now, you did touch on the one where you can kind of colour in a picture and then you can modify it on the phone. But are there other, say, for somebody who would like to just kind of, maybe they can't give over access to the computer for the full day, but they would like to print out materials that their child can use over the day, what would you suggest in that case?
Absolutely. So Twinkle, without the E, .ie, they have opened up access to their premium services. And there's lots of resources and tools and printables on there. You have a worksheet creator on my Padlet wall that I really like. You have a handwriting page creator where you can actually make your own worksheets for, say, the opportunity to improve and perfect the cursive handwriting script or whatever it is the child would normally be doing. Look, that's not a bad thing. Like, I fully embrace, I actually work on paper primarily. I have like everything backed up on a drive, and I work digitally through G Suite primarily myself. But look, get the pen and pencil in hand. I mean, that's actually a skill I would really worry will suffer over the next number of weeks. Regular handwriting. It's not something really we probably pursue enough with the children in the home. So this is an opportunity to do it. So yeah, go for it. But I'd be wary of really pushing the worksheet vibe. Get this worksheet done. Do this worksheet. A bit of that is absolutely fine, but I'm nervous of worksheets, I have to say. And again, we have to be aware that in the majority of schools, in fairness to teachers, they don't rely on that way of working anymore, particularly for younger children. It's hands-on, active learning in groups. That's what we advocate. You know, we want constructivist learners who are learning socially in groups, have an opportunity to use language. Isolated working with a worksheet, a bit of that is there, but just watch the amount of it.
And you mentioned that Twinkle have taken down their paywall, as have other companies. I think CJ Fallon as well.
All the publishers.
Done that as well for Irish-based textbooks.
Yeah, so CJ Fallon, Edco and Follands have all dropped. Okay. Yeah, have all dropped their requirement to have access to the physical books in order to engage with the online resources. And there's some fabulous things there. I mean, say, for example, I used to find that I used the Planet Maths videos a lot in school with my kids. They liked the use of them, and the games and the activities that come with them, they are linked very well to work in the book. So parents might like to have a look at those, absolutely. And that's something simple that people can sign up to. It's not a complicated system. So yeah, definitely. And I mean, look, I'm not completely against books. I'm actually, my approach with teaching is a little bit of everything always. I think we've learned, say, for example, to bring up a contemporary issue, the concerns and the review of the use of the iPads in Ratoth, for example. It got a lot of people talking the last number of weeks. Just reflecting on that, what we learned there was probably exclusive use of screens and e-books is not a good idea, and we can all maybe learn from that. And exclusive use of one tool is probably, be that one book, books or iPad, that's not a good idea either, because we want our learners, we want multifaceted learners who are able to work in different ways to be prepared for the world that into which they're emerging as adults. And again, I mean, we know that from the new primary framework that emerged. I mean, one of the key competencies, number seven, is being a digital learner. So we have to provide for that, but there's nothing wrong with the tried and tested old school methods either, for sure.
We didn't touch at all on two things. One is exam preparation for second level students. Yeah. Is there anything in particular you'd add? I mean, I know they probably have the motivation of the exam, even though they also have the uncertainty of it this year. But anything you'd add there in terms of, you know, the kind of materials they would look at or how they would manage their time, because they're probably going to do it more independently anyway.
They are. And my heart goes out to those students, just the degree of uncertainty. And, you know, it's just disappointing for teachers as well that invest so much in their pupils. I know myself, my own sister is an Irish teacher. And, you know, while it was a pragmatic decision taken to give 100% to all across the orals and the presentations and the practicals, it is devastating considering the work that was put in, and it you know, certain pupils miss out on an opportunity to shine. So my heart goes out to them, and maybe further disruption awaits as regards what was to have been their proposed schedule. I am a lot more optimistic for them though as regards working online, because to be fair, our second level students, given the fact that it's more appropriate because of the age of the student that they're working with, as opposed to our primary school pupils, those students, most of them have some mechanism already in place to communicate with the teachers. And I think the secondary schools used the latest weather phenomena and our storms and our, you know, be it weather storms or snowstorms over the past number of years to learn, well, look, we need to be careful here because there is a good chance that something will keep us out of school for up to a week or two in February, March, key times where we should be preparing for exams. So they have something in place. I would say if you can keep as open a line of communication with your teacher as possible, to engage with those tools at least every day, but also like work away yourself. Like this is valuable time for revision that won't go, you know, to waste. And your preparation for the oral will benefit you, or your practical will benefit you in the long term for whatever rest of the assessment can be completed over the next number of weeks and months. But yeah, I would say try to manage your time, work in bursts. Don't try to necessarily do what you would do in school. You may not maybe get to every subject every day. Get out and move if you can. Go for regular walks. I mean, I know myself when I reflect on when I was studying for the Leaving Cert, you get sucked in and you think that time equals productivity. It doesn't. So just being conscious of that, and as well, the people around them as well being conscious of that, a certain degree of understanding is required. And in fairness, our second level teachers, they have been outstanding online. And to just mention, the PDST Technology and Education have done superb work. This is the Professional Development Service for Teachers, have done superb work with all our schools, but in particular our second level schools. A lot of them have engaged with the training and the support services for distant learning, and the PDST have an excellent online page to support schools to establish distant learning, and a lot of our post-primary schools have been engaging with that. So well done to all sides there, because you know, there's high stakes stuff there, very different to us at primary level. Of course, our work matters too, but as regards the long-term futures and the ramifications for this school closure, you do feel it more acutely, obviously, for our post-primary pupils, you know.
Yeah, well, it's more urgent for them, I suppose.
It is, yeah.
The final one, given what we've been talking about, the final one is probably a difficult question to answer, but where teachers or students don't have access to computers or reasonable speed internet, is there anything you can think of that they can do to make the most of this time, particularly in certain parts of the country, or it may be for financial reasons where people just can't afford to have either a computer or to have Wi-Fi access or internet access?
I'd imagine at the very least, schools would have a good text system in those situations. So schools, again, could be receiving some ideas or daily inspiration or something from the class teacher that could be sent out through the IPPN text system or whatever mechanism they're using. So that would be great. And I really encourage teachers that don't have anything set up online, or maybe know it's not a runner because of connectivity issues or whatever, broadband being what it is in this country, that they might explore something like that. But there's so many offline activities. I mean, I just sat down the other day and I made a list again, people were asking me, what should I do? So I made a list: gardening, cooking, baking, keeping a diary of the last couple of days and weeks to come. It will be a very interesting thing, an artifact to look back on in the future for you and your family. Oral history projects, so you can make a recording. You hopefully will be able to chat to granny or granddad over the phone, at the very least, if you can't see them. Ask them questions about long ago. They'd be only delighted to spend quality time with you in that way. Now's the time to learn a new skill. Learn how to tell the time, tie your laces, ride a bike, sew a button, do laundry, learn how to put bed sheets on a bed. I saw a great one: learn how to wrap a present. Great, like brilliant. Just get a box, get all the newspapers, off you go. This is a great one: learning the phone numbers of people in your family off by heart. This is something that children don't know anymore because they don't need to, because technology has made us all that little bit more stupid. Lovely task. Comparison shopping activity: get out the Argos catalogue, go, you know, or any toy catalogue, and say, I'm giving you €2,000. I want you to buy this, that, the other. Off you go. Do a price comparison, see what you come back with. Learn how to skip board games. Amazing learning potential in board games. And we all have them and only take them out at Christmas. Introduce your child to the encyclopedia that they probably don't even know what it is up on the shelf. They may not have engaged with it. I mean, there's so much. If you just look around your house and if you think about things in a different way, every time you measure something at breakfast, that's maths. Every time you have a conversation with granny or granddad, that's an opportunity to learn about the past and history. Watch the news. You know, there's just so much. And what will be great is RTÉ have announced this morning now. Obviously, we don't know what the quality or type of activities will be offered in this service, but they have announced that they're going to do a school program for 1 hour every day. I think it's 1 hour. So again, they're hoping that they're actually going to film it in a classroom and they're going to broadcast it. And that's a lovely development for those of us who love technology but are nervous about excluding people and kind of widening that gap further. Everyone will have an access to a TV, so they should be able to watch that at the very least. So that's the kind of thing that a teacher could do or a parent could set up. I mean, really, this is about being as creative as you want to be with the resources and time you have.
Kira, thank you so much for everything. You have been so creative and so responsive in everything I've asked there, and I really appreciate you taking the time to respond and to help teachers and parents indeed with your answers here.
And I would recommend, just before we finish, to keep an eye on hashtag EdShareIE, and when you're sharing the Padlet with everybody in the notes, pop that in there and keep an eye on that. It is truly amazing, the generosity of spirit and the sharing that's happening amongst educators. You wouldn't believe what ideas you can get from just following that hashtag. You don't ever have to contribute. Lurkers are welcome. But like everything from, I saw a teacher last night put up the most amazing resources where he found a way to tie in maths, geography and English activities to League of Ireland clubs in Ireland. So say, for example, having taught in Bray, I looked up the Bray Wanderers page and it was like section maths activities and geography activities, talking about where the players come from, what countries, and learning about those countries. Truly amazing. I saw then people giving simple ideas. What are we learning this morning? So a mother took a picture of her children out with their high-vis jackets on a country road picking up rubbish. You know, simple ideas, really amazing, but it makes you feel that, do you know what? Other people are out there trying things, being creative. If it works for them, it'll work for me. It's like the teach me concept of share and share alike. That's all we're trying to do here. So definitely keep an eye on the hashtag EdShareIE.
A final suggestion there to round off an entire podcast of creative suggestions from my colleague, Kira Riley, who lectures in digital education in the Marino Institute of Education on Griffith Avenue in Dublin 9. That brings this week's Inside Education to a close. You can listen back to this and hundreds of previous episodes of Inside Education by going to my website, seandelaney.com, and clicking on podcasts. You can write to me by email to insideeducationpodcast@yahoo.com. You can follow me on Twitter @InsideEd. If you liked this episode, please leave a rating and a review of the podcast wherever you get your podcasts from. It helps more educators find out about it. My book about teaching is Become the Primary Teacher Everyone Wants to Have, and it's available from good libraries and online bookstores. I'll be back on Wednesday next with a new podcast. Until then, this is Sean Delaney signing off. Thank you for listening.